You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFMLP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team correspondent Andrew Rainey, and I'm here in the studio today with Rondale Lance, who is running this year for the Sheriff's Office. Thanks so much for being in the studio with us today.
Well, thank you so much for the offer. I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to your listeners and share our message with the community, so thank you.
How long have you been in Buncombe County?
Well, I'm born and raised in Buncombe County. When I was in the seventh grade, we moved away. My father went to college in South Carolina. So I left in the seventh grade, came back my senior year, graduated from Inca, and I've been here ever since. So while Dad was in college, and he's a minister, and he took a church in Walterboro, South Carolina, I was away, but I thought, man, I got to get back to those mountains. If I ever get back, I'm going to stay if I can. And so I've been blessed to be able to stay here in the mountains and be here ever since then.
Why did you decide to run for this position?
Well, when I heard that the sheriff was not going to run, Sheriff Duncan, I've known him for a long time, done a great job, wonderful job. But when I heard he wasn't going to run, my first concern was who's going to step up and take care of the men and women of the sheriff's office, make sure they are treated properly, make sure they are treated fair, make sure they have the equipment, they have the knowledge they need to make an effect in our community. And then the second was most of my family lives in Buncombe County. Who understands the community, someone that can bridge that gap between law enforcement and community? And I thought, well, the best person I know for that job be me. I've been doing it. I'm FOP president, Fraternal Order Police president, have been going on 20 years. And so we've done youth camps. We've done reached out across to the community, and I fought for the men and women for better pay and make sure they have the tools they need. So I felt compelled and started the process to file, and we're excited about being in the race.
What issues do you plan to highlight in this campaign?
Well, there's several issues, as you know. I mean, things that are national issues that we hear on TV all the time, the opioid problems, the gun issue. But then also there's local problems such as what I feel are some needs, the victims' rights when they become victim of a crime, make sure they're taken care of, make sure they are treated fairly, and then due process is there. Reaching out to the community through a victim's witness office, and doing a better job. I think we can do better in solving crimes by using things that are not used now, such as those that go out and take prints, having a full-time forensic department, which is not there now. And that's just two of the things. And just the atmosphere and environment, it's different in the sheriff's office, and this is why. And as FOP president, we have fought for police officers' Bill of Rights. Sheriff's departments or sheriff offices in North Carolina, a sheriff can fire you. You could have been there 5 minutes or 15 years if I can come in and go, I no longer need you. And there's not a thing in the world you can do about it. Now, if I say I don't longer need you because you lied or because you did this, then I can grieve it and fight it. But that atmosphere in sheriff departments across North Carolina, the officers are afraid to speak up. When there's unfairness, they're afraid to speak out because a sheriff can fire you like that just because he wants to. As long as he don't give you a reason, he can say, I no longer need you, and there's not a thing in the world you could do about it. That environment's got to change. The men and women in law enforcement are afraid to speak out. At the Asheville Police Department, where I retired from, we had a grievance process. We had a civil service board. We could speak out if we felt things weren't being done right. But you take the sheriff's officers in North Carolina, if you speak out, then you're gone. And that intimidation and fear has got, you can't have that in law enforcement when you expect these men and women to protect our county and to see things they think need to be changed in the county. I feel like they can't bring it up because, that intimidation factor. Plus, being an elected office, you've got to be careful not to make people mad because they won't vote for you. But right's right and wrong's wrong, and whether you get a vote, whether you don't get a vote, as long as you know in your heart you're doing the right thing. And that's what's important to me.
What kinds of issues have officers been feeling intimidated to speak up about?
Well, when I worked at the police department, I was sworn through the county. I was a drug agent undercover. And I know during the election time, they're afraid they basically shut down because if they stop the wrong person, they stop a big supporter of the sheriff, or they stop somebody that's friends with somebody in the higher-ups of the department or the office. I've known officers be called in and made to apologize for stopping someone, during election time. And the officers are just afraid to do their job. If they stop a big supporter of the sheriff, or they stop somebody making a lot of donations to the campaign, and they can be scrutinized and be called in and go, hey, you know, give them a break. Or, you know, it's just a – people don't realize the atmosphere that's there during the time of election in our – not just Buncombe County, but all across North Carolina because of the laws that a sheriff can hire and fire who he wants to at will.
The mayor regularly noted last year on the campaign trail that no city in North Carolina is a sanctuary city because the counties run the jails. Would you support Buncombe being named a sanctuary county? And to what extent would your office work with ICE?
No, I would. I wouldn't be for ICE becoming a sanctuary city. You know, the what? And I've talked to people from the Hispanic community. I had a good conversation the other night with one of our DACA, local DACA person. And I talked to her for a long time, and she enlightened me to a lot of the issues that I didn't know about DACA. And I think our community, if you just watch TV, you don't really understand what the DACA program is about and what all it does. And she explained to me how hard it is to be a DACA participant. You have to, papers you have to file, the things you have to go through, you have to have a clean record. And it was very enlightening to me to sit down and talk with her. So I think there's a big misconception as to what DACA really means and what it really is. And to the Hispanic community that's here in Buncombe. And so I think there's a big understanding that needs to be more brought out to the people that they can understand it. You know, and even I was with her when we was watching the State of the Union speech. I watched it with her at WLOS. And all the points she agreed with. We don't want violent criminals here. She said we don't want MS-13 here. You know, the same issues that we have. You know, but they want a fair process. And when she told me what they had to go through to maintain and had to refile to be a DACA participant, I said, well, I didn't know that. I was like a lot of people thinking that DACA meant just anybody here illegally, and it doesn't. So there's a lot of education that needs to be done about our Hispanic community. And I've talked to several church groups and different groups, and I said, what we will do, never will I, as sheriff, will I say, go out and try to find illegals. You know, don't go out and try to find people that are here illegally. We will never do that. But what we will do, we will treat everybody the same. If I stopped you today and you, I would run your name to see if you had warrants on you. I would run you through our files, national file. And if you had a warrant or you had something that that says, yeah, he's wanted in another state, I would take you up there and hold you and go through the process. Same way we would do with anybody we stop. We will not treat the Hispanic community any different than we treat everybody else. And, you know, and you just have to let them. And I asked her, I said, are most of the Hispanic community here, are they afraid of police? Are they afraid of, you know, she said they're more afraid. I don't know if I should say this, but she said they're more afraid in Henderson County because there's more of an enforcement for Hispanics in Henderson County than they are in here. She said most people here are not afraid of being stopped by the police. And I'll tell you, in my years of law enforcement, never have we been told to go out and find people that are here illegally. Never have we, the emphasis been put on us to do that. And the whole time that I've been in law enforcement, when we stop them, we treat just like we do everybody else. We run the same checks and run the same process that everybody else goes through. Now, if we have had people that had a hit from ICE, and there's been times when we call ICE and go, hey, we got this subject here. It says that he's wanted. Well, how many of you got? We just got one guy. I can't tell you how many. ICE says, we're not coming after one guy. If you call us and you've got a large group of people that are here illegally and you've got a problem, then we'll look at it. But they're so swamped and covered up, they're not, you know, coming here if we've got one guy that we think is illegal. And through my years as law enforcement, you know, we ran across them, but ICE is very reluctant to even come, you know, unless you've got a big organization of smuggling or big organization of illegal activity. I've never dealt with ICE because we've called them and sent them texts before, and they go, you know, we ain't got time to come for everybody. So that fear, I think, is a lot of times made greater by people that don't understand the whole process. But as a sheriff, I would never want my deputies to go out and start looking and trying to find people that are here illegal. Now, if you're here illegal or if you've got issues, don't drink and drive. Don't get in fights. Don't, you know. But if you get stopped, we're going to treat you the same as we do everybody. We're going to run all the checks and see what comes up. If it comes up that you're wanted by ICE or somebody else or the federal government or committing a crime somewhere else, then we're going to call that department and go, well, we've got them here in Buncombe. Do you want them? You know. Especially if they're criminals, you know, we do. If there's a criminal here, it's a robbery or whatever, you know, and they're wanted somewhere else, so, you know, we're going to make sure they get there. Our emphasis is not going to be on finding and causing hectic for the Hispanic communities in our area.
Do you believe there's a trust issue with law enforcement and people and communities of color? If so, how do you plan to build that trust?
Well, you know, working at the Asheville Police Department for so long, we deal more with the minority community there than the deputies at the sheriff's office don't deal with it as much because they deal more in the rural area of the county. And a percentage of minorities are less in the county. In the city, you know, with the police department, we dealt with it all the time as patrol officers and as a sergeant. And we were continually reaching out. And as a FOP president, we probably spend $17,000 to $20,000 a year in youth camps, reaching out to the kids in the school system. There's two youth camps that we sponsor. I worked in one every year. We reach out to the Asheville School Foundation. We reach out through Boy Scouts and reach out through the Special Olympics. So we have a lot of programs that we try to bridge that gap, you know, with the minority community. You know, when I worked at the police department, we was all the time in there, you know, doing events and, you know, Southern Conference tournaments coming up. There'll be, they go into and take the kids from the housing communities there. So the effort is there from the police department. When I was a police officer, we were encouraged and to go out and reach out and bridge that gap. Now, a lot of times the young children, a lot of times when we have connection, a lot of times is with the high school area kids, and we've tried to reach out as FOP. We stepped up our efforts from the small kids to try to reach the teenagers, you know, in programs and let them know that, you know, at what we're about, what to expect. I think they started a great program now, the DMV, when they go through driver training in high school, that officers come in and teach, and they, you know, this is what the officer expects when we stop you. You know, keep your hands on the wheel and, you know, explain it. And so a lot of it just, what do officers expect, you know, and what do they expect from officers? So starting that communication is very important. And, you know, as a sheriff's office, we'll continue to reach out to the community to have, you know, meeting with the different community groups. And, you know, and I think one of the key things that in law enforcement, they don't do a lot, they have these forums and people come and talk. But what you need to do is, as sheriff, I need to just go out to a restaurant in this community, sit down and talk to people out in the restaurant, talk to people at Walmart parking lot. That's where you get the true story. People come to forums and stuff. They come there for a generalized idea of what they want. If you want the true story, just get out in the community. And as sheriff, one of my plans is being out in the community. You'll see me out at the little convenience stores. You'll see me out at coffee shops. You'll see me at Sam's, Walmart's, you know, everywhere. To talk to you there where nobody else is around, right? You tell me, what's the problem? Where can we help? What can we do different? You know, a lot of times for political sake, people go, let's have this forum, come listen to me. But if you want the real answer, talk to the men and women that live it every day, and that's where I want to be and get there. And not that the other is not important, but a lot of times they are the ones overlooked.
The open data policing website that tracks all traffic stops in North Carolina indicates definitive and clear racial profiling across all counties in the state. Sheriff, what are your plans to address that issue?
Well, you know, as FOP president, I've dealt with Dee Williams from NAACP and Dolores from Black Lives Matters. You know, we've all been in meetings together. And a lot of them, the statutes and facts that they presented I've addressed it, and I've addressed it to city council as FOP president. You look at the stops. You have to look at the areas they come from. And I've said this in the paper and on TV. The city of Asheville, for example, ever since 1993, officers have been told to spend, and they even paid officers overtime every night, two officers in each housing complex to be in there. So since 1993, you've had at least 2 to 3 officers in a housing complex continually. There's a housing team that works nothing but the housing complexes. You have patrol officers are told you spend an hour a day in housing complexes. So when you've got that focus on just that small group of minorities, the number is going to be, of course, a lot larger because, unfortunately, in law enforcement, and you can go back and I talked to 3 years ago, I said the exact same thing. Unfortunately, in law enforcement, there's more emphasis on law enforcement and not enough emphasis on being a peace officer. And if you can go, you can Google my name, see where I spoke that to a radio station 2 years ago. Officers were judged by how many tickets you write, how many people you put in jail. I could go downtown when I worked Augment, which is where they pay you extra to be downtown and work downtown. And if I worked the whole shift and I didn't write a ticket or put someone in jail, the captain would say, you ain't going to work augment no more. They didn't care whether that I was up there, and I spoke to people from Germany, from Australia. I spoke to families up there, talked to kids, had pictures made with students, asking me questions. I wasn't judged by that. I was judged by how many tickets I wrote and how many people I put in jail. And I'm thinking, you know, the same way in the housing complex, when they put these officers in there, they didn't care that I went over and spent 3 hours walking around talking to the kids in the community, talking to the parents. How many tickets did you write while you was there? None. Well, what are you doing? So we've got to change that mindset as law enforcement. It's not that enforcement part. Now, when we need it to be there and need to do it, be assured that we will, and we'll do it. But that mindset, we're peace officers also, and a lot of times we forget that. I would rather have a deputy or an officer spend 3 hours in one of our housing complexes playing basketball with the kids, talking to the kids, and come out of there. What did you do? Well, I talked to this family, that family. Then it come out, my first question would be, how many tickets did you write? You know, how many people did you put in jail? So we've got to change that mindset, and that's one of the things I think would help us. The pressure is on all law enforcement. You're judged by how many tickets you write, how many people you put in jail, and we've got to change that. Now, if people do violate it, yeah, we'll do our job, but don't, you know, allow an officer to make a decision. I'm not going to write you a ticket today, but I'm going to, you know, just give you a warning and, you know, talk to the kids that are there. And so that mindset has got to change. That's one thing I hope to bring to the Sheriff's Department. There's a thing called, it was called verbal judo, but it's tactical communications. Best class I ever took. It tells you how to talk to people. You talk to them the same way. You know, you don't put people down. You use, you know, the language as a tool. The most important language, tool is our language. The way I treat you, the way I talk to you, you know, and that's an important class. And I was an instructor and was certified to teach it. And that's something we want to be all through the Sheriff's Department, even the detention center, the way you treat people with respect. You may not respect them, but you treat them with respect. And that's what we need on the streets and what's what we need in law enforcement.
Some counties in North Carolina have adopted local policy revisions to reduce the disproportionate rate of African Americans and people of color being pulled over and searched, such as prioritizing regulatory stops and requiring written consent. Do you think these type of policy revisions are effective?
I'm not sure what all you're talking about there. You're talking about, you know, to pull anybody over as a police officer, you've got to have reasonable suspicion, number one. You cannot pull someone over, or shouldn't be pulling someone over just for pulling them over because of what they look like or what they're driving. You've got to have reasonable suspicion, and you've got to be able to articulate that in a court of law. From reasonable suspicion, then you build probable cause. Do you have probable cause to write a ticket? Do you have probable cause to make an arrest? And everything that you do as an officer in that aspect is judged, one, by your department and your supervisors, then it's goes to court. You've got public defenders or attorneys looking at it, trying to see where you did wrong so they can get their client off. You got the district attorney's office looking at it, making sure what you did is right so they can get a conviction. And so I'm not quite understand the question that, you know, is there, you know, and I've heard people say, well, you shouldn't stop a car because it's got a dead brake light out, or you shouldn't stop a car because the tire is slick. I could tell you story after story where we stopped someone, maybe just for something like that. Maybe wanted from another state for a horrendous crime, or they're driving revoked, or they've got a kid in the back that's not in a child safety seat, and they've got drinking alcohol in the front. It's a vital tool, but I say, you know, you can't stop a car unless you've got reasonable suspicion, which is what the law states. And so a lot of times those simple stops for a brake light out or a tail light out have led to large seizures of drugs, has led to arrest of people wanted from other counties, other states. So I don't know if that's what you're referring to, but, you know, as long as the officer is going by what the state of North Carolina and the Constitution says, you know, just to not enforce that because it affects people, poverty level people more so than people of good means as far as money-wise, you know, you get into that area because these people, you know, they used to tell me when I worked drugs that some of the drug dealers, if you see them in their nice new car, they don't have drugs because they don't want it seized. If you see them going out in a old hoopty, they called it, he's probably got drugs with him. You know, so a lot of times they take those avenues. And, you know, most officers, I give so many breaks. If I stop someone, I got to tell light out, more than likely I'm just going to give them a warning. And most officers will too, because one thing officers don't like doing is going to court. So every ticket you write
every arrest you make, you're going to have to end up go to court. And you go to court, you know when? You go to court on your day off. And it starts at 9, and you're from there to 9 to 5, and they may hear your case, and they may not. So officers are prone, and I did, you know, to give as many breaks as we can to keep us from going to court. If it's something minor, such as a tell lied out or something, it's more, you've got a reason to stop them. But why you got to stop? Do you smell alcohol in the breath? Is there a child in the car? Is there a gun in the car? Are they wanted from somewhere else? It's a keeping the community safe, too. That's very important to keep our community safe, that is. So I wouldn't encourage my deputies to overlook that, you know. I trust them to do their job and do it the right way, then treat the people that you stop the right way. And I think that's a great tool that we can use to help keep our community safer.
In your opinion, what are the most effective forms of accountability regarding racial equity within the Buncombe County Sheriff's Office?
Right. As many, you know, you hear a lot of people say, as sheriff or as chief, I'm going to have an open door policy. Well, my plan, I tell people, and they don't understand, I'm not going to have an open door policy. I'm out the door policy. I'm coming to you. I'm coming to your neighborhood. I'm coming, because a lot of people, you say, I got open door policy, people can come to me. Well, people ain't going to get in their car and drive up and go walking in the sheriff's office and say, hey, I want to talk to you. Even as officers, when new chief came in, I got open door policy. An officer's not going to go walking into the chief's office and go, hey, chief. But you know where most of the ideas and where they felt most comfortable talking to the chief? They seen him out in the parking lot. They seen him out at a, you know, whenever we had an event or training. We go to the range and the chief's there. That's where they would really talk to the chief. And same way, so my philosophy is going to be, I'm going to have out-the-door policy. I'm going to be in your neighborhood. I'm going to see you in Walmart. And you're going to have to come to me. I'm going to come up to you and go, hey, how's everything going? Anything that you've got concerns about? As I campaign now, that's one of my campaign slogans. I see people, I don't know, I go, you live in Buncombe? And they go, yeah. I go, you know, well, I'm running for sheriff. What part of Buncombe do you live? I start the conversation. And that's, I think, it's easy to set back. Open door policy, you got problems, come to me. You know, mine is out of door policy. I'm coming to you. All right, minority community, do you have a problem with our deputies? Faith community, do you have a problem? LGBTQ community, do you have a problem? You know, I'll come talking to you and say, hey, and I want to be a sheriff that you see me, and I'm at the Happy Hill restaurant eating, you feel comfortable coming walking, hey, sheriff, hey, you know, and you can talk to me. And that's what I want to be out there. You know, I've already got quality people that in my administration that can handle everything, which will allow me, because of my trust in them and knowing them, the ability to be out in the community more and, you know, and be talking to you. So that's my plan. That's what I hope to do to address that, you know. Come to me, call me, say you want me to meet you somewhere, I'll come meet you. You know, you don't have to come up. Because now, you know, the sheriff's office now, and this is another thing, I'm going to try to get the sheriff's office moved. I shouldn't say this because I'm giving my plans away to all my other political opponents. But now, let's say Granny Smith out in Bonnersville wants to come see the sheriff. She has to drive all the way downtown, find a parking place Monday through Friday downtown. Then she's got to come in and take her belt off, her pocketbook, put it in a thing. And she goes to, God forbid if it beeps, then they're going to wander. Or if Pastor Bill wants to come, same thing. Get an elevator, come. I want to get up with our county commissioners. I want a sheriff's office where you can drive, not have to find a place to park. You can drive, and you can come to the front desk and say, hey, I want to see the sheriff. Is he in? And then call up me, hey, sheriff, somebody down here want to see him. Well, I can't, but I'm sending somebody there to meet them. So to make the sheriff's department more accessible to the community. You know, and one of the things that I learned from working downtown, I was on the bike sergeant. We worked with Occupy Wall Street people. You know, we worked with all the groups down there protesting the groups. You know, we learned how to work with them. Now, you want to march? Let's march. Which route you want to take? My bike team will go with you. We'll make sure nothing, you know. And we had a great working relationship with Occupy Wall Street, with these groups that's downtown and protesting. And they knew if we got a line, they were going to get us, but they'll listen to us and let us. We work together. And I learned that great lesson by working downtown on the bike team for several years. And you deal with such a diversity downtown. And understanding what people's, you know, we probably totally disagree on what you're marching for and what I stand for, but I mean, I can't help you. We can let you do it safely and let us do our job safely. So that's the training I had and my experience in law enforcement. I want to continue that with our community.
At the end of your first term as Buncombe County Sheriff, what's going to be different with the relationship of law enforcement and communities of color?
Well, I think you'll see that, you know, that they will feel like they can very easily access the sheriff, especially if we can get the sheriff's department moved from downtown, that they'll feel like they can get in their car and drive up to the sheriff's office and say, hey, I want to see the sheriff about this issue. And if I'm not there, then I can say, send this person there or let them talk to them and see what they are, and I'll call them back or I'll get back with them. It's just to have that openness where they feel free to come. You know, they're not going to be intimidated, like, what are you here for? Why do you want to see the sheriff for? You know, I want the people that work for me to know that I want to be available to all the communities and all that, you know, and going out to communities, be involved in local community events, a lot involved with the, and I'll still be involved with the FOP, and they're all the time reaching out and doing events, and I'll be there for that too.
Will you support a wider CIT crisis intervention team training for officers to handle mental health concerns with de-escalation versus use of force tactics?
That, and I've told people before, and I met one of the ladies that participates and helps set up CIT, and I told her, I said, that was the best, one of the best classes I ever attended. Because we went, not only, we were trained not by police officers or police, we were trained by people from these many different organizations in Asheville and Buncombe County. We went to Copestone. How do they deal with that? We went to the VA. How do the VAs feel? We went to people with intellectual disabilities. What are their needs? What are their concerns? And we went to drug rehab places. And to see that that training, that is something that every officer should be required to have that training. To me, it's one of the best trainings that was there because it opens your insight that I may have to deal with you different than I deal with this person and then this person to understand what they're going through. And you can't deal with everybody the same. And that was one of the best trainings I ever had. You know, and being when I was at the police department, I was commander of the hostage or the crisis negotiation team. You know, we went to Florida and trained special training for that, where we would sit and talk. You know, I've talked people off of the bridge, talked people off out of rooms. You know, people to let a hostage go, and that training that I received as that we trained every month, plus the training we received, you know, in Florida and different places. You learn how to talk to people. You learn how to get on a level, not talk down to them, not talk over them, but talk to them. But more importantly, when they tell you the most important thing, listening. That's what more important than talking. I can learn how to talk to you, but if I'm not here listening to you and hear what you're telling me, you'll tell me everything that's going on in your life. You'll tell me where you are right now at this moment if I'm dealing with you, if I just listen. A lot of times we're bad to want to talk, and I'm rambling here, you know. But one of the greatest gifts in law enforcement is being able to listen. And I can listen to you, you know, and you'll somewhere during our conversation, you'll let me know what's bothering you today. You'll let me know why you're out here on this ledge. You'll let me know if I just listen. So that was a great experience for me, being a commander of the crisis negotiation team and going out on calls with SWAT and going into neighborhoods where people were barricaded in, people on the point of committing suicide. Just listen to them and talk to them and let them know there is hope. We can help you. We're here to help you. Sometimes it takes an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. But when you can have that time to go through that process, and there's many times when you don't have that. Someone comes in with a gun, you've got to make a decision then. A knife going at people, you got to make a decision then. So de-escalation is great when you can do it. But there's times when you don't have, you know, you can't de-escalate someone with a gun shooting it, you know, or someone with a knife running at people. But when you've got the time, and we are trained that, and, you know, that's one important thing. You've got the time to sit and talk to them, but more importantly, sit and listen to them. And you learn a lot more that than talking by listening.
Do you support the construction of the new Buncombe County Jail?
You know, I've not made my final decision on that yet because I've heard the pros and cons, and I'd like to talk to some professionals. You know, one of the things with the detention facility is that, you know, we house a lot of federal prisoners. And I think, and I could be wrong, you know, the county gets paid $150 or $25 a day for each federal inmate that they house. And one of the perceptions is if we build a new jail, we get all these federal inmates there, we can make money because the federal government's paying us $125 a day to keep these people. You know, and so if my concern is they're looking at it as a money-making adventure rather than a real need, you know, here in Buncombe County. And I have concerns if you're looking at making money off of that process. If you want it built because you think that we can make a lot of money from federal inmates coming in here, that kind of raises a question in my mind. Who's wanting to make the money? Where's the money going? You know, so I'd like to sit down and see what, you know, for sure, how many people do we house here in Buncombe? How many people, much room do we have? Do we really need it before that reason, or do we need it because we think we're going to make money off of it? If we think we're going to make money off, it's going to be a money-making thing. I have a problem with making money off prisoners in that term if it's not a real safety need for the community.
According to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, there are high rates of recidivism among released prisoners. They found from a study done in 30 states that within 5 years of release, about 76.6% of once incarcerated persons were rearrested. How do you plan to curb those statistics in Buncombe County jails?
Yes, I've looked at that, and one of the people that's going to be part of my administration is now, you know, these people commit to you, I can't because they're still working there, but they are part of the state prison system, so they have a lot of knowledge. But I've talked to her, and I've told my people I'm working on my campaign. From the time that someone's arrested and brought into the Buncombe County Jail, I want an assessment done to know as far as, you know, do they have addiction problem? Do they have mental health problem? Do they have physical problems? Do they have a disease problem, TB or whatever? You know, do they have family? Do they have families who are going to be coming to see them, kids? And to get a profile on who they are. And then say, and there are so many good social networks here in Buncombe County and in Asheville that's not being used. I want to put together, if someone comes in, and I want a staff to sit down with each one and go, you know, do you have your education? Let me hook you up with somebody from maybe tech. Let's work on getting you a GED. Let me, work. What type of work do you do? And I want us to be able, you know, a thing that in one of my research of her, you know, I don't necessarily want you to be a good prisoner. Anybody can be a good prisoner. I want you to be a good person when you get out of jail. I want you to be a good citizen. How can we help you be a good citizen? You know, let us, you know, if you got an addiction problem, let us get you in a program. Let us work with you in that program. And I want those programs to be there at the detention center where during the day they can come and have different meetings with different groups, whether it be for addiction, whether it be for abuse, whether it be for, you know, whatever the case may be. And say, listen, there is hope. You know, we want to help you. When you leave the detention center, we don't want you back. Let us get you in this program. Let us get you, you know, involved in getting your GED. Let us get you involved in this jobs programs. And I attended a thing the other day over at a local hotel where all these nonprofits were set up. And I was amazed at what they offer, but they're not really being utilized by law enforcement community like they should. And I'm meeting with one Thursday that deals with families with troubled kids where they'll come in and they will help. They'll tell the parents, you know, next time the kid acting up, don't call the police, call us. You know, they learn the child. They learn the emotions that they're going through. There's some homes that we'll go to 10, 11 times a year, same call. But this group will come in and go, call us because we are professionals. We know how to, you know, what psychological issues they're facing. So there are so many good programs. That's one of the things I said. When they come in, we want, first thing I do, I want somebody to sit down with them, get all that we can understand from them. Why are they in here? All right? I mean, I've got a nephew, just got out of jail 2 weeks ago, under house arrest right now, had a drug problem, been at the Buncombe County Jail. And I've talked to him, well, how are you treated up there? What are the programs I have up there? What do you think we need? And I've talked to people that's been arrested. How are you treated in there? What do you think could be done better? And I've seen programs from across the country. Because it's so important, more important that you leave there feeling some hope. Now, addiction, and you've got to realize, if you're an addict, you're going to reuse. You can't expect an addict. They come in an addict, they go back out an addict. We need to put something in there. And attention is the best place to get their attention and go, hey, while you're here, let us help you. Let's introduce you to someone that might can help you. You know, so that's very important to me because detention, you know, we as detention officers, we're not there for punishment. The courts gave their punishment by losing their freedom for a month, 2 months, a year. But while they're there, what a great opportunity to try to reach into their life and go, you know, how can we help change that? And so that's a very important to me that I've really looked at in my campaign.
Recently, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions said the sheriff is a critical part of Anglo-American heritage of law enforcement to the National Sheriff's Association in Washington. Do you agree with Sessions' statement?
I don't have a clue what he is trying to say there, unless he's trying to say that I'm like you, I can only speculate, and it boggles my mind that he would try to make some connection between, you know, the race of and the job that someone does and the race, you know. trying to say they're better off. It's a heritage to be. You know, I don't understand what he's trying to say, but I can just tell you, in that my administration, before I decided to run for sheriff, I met with key people that I trusted, that I knew their work ethic, I knew the morals, their values, and I knew the job they did. And I got them to commit to me to be part of my deputy chiefs and captains before I decided to run. Then I decided to run. I went to a friend of mine that worked at the sheriff's office. I go, hey, this is my executive board. This is who they are. And I said, I'm going to have the first female deputy chief. I'm going to have the first female captain. I want to have the first minority captain. I didn't know this until she said, I told her who I had. I go, what's the highest ranking female now at the county? And she goes, lieutenant. I go, well, when was she promoted? She said, well, she is promoted under Bobby Minford. I said, so you're telling me in the last 12 years there's not been a female promoted to lieutenant or above? She goes, no. And I was shocked. And I said, well, what's the highest ranking minority? She said, same thing. I said, so in 12 years there's not been a minority promoted to lieutenant or above? She goes, no. I go, wow, I was kind of taken back. I said, well, I've already got committed the first minority captain then, and then the first deputy chief female and the first captain female. So, I'm very much, and it's not because that they're white or female or black. It's because these are people that I knew can do the job. You know, their color or their gender, but I knew they can do the job. And for me to think that, I come from the National Police Department where my sergeants, my lieutenants, my captains, now the chief's, female. I've worked for lieutenant, minorities. And so it's, to hear of this day and time that we've got a law enforcement entity here in our area that had no female above lieutenant or no minority above lieutenant, I was taken back by that. So, my stance is, there's great men and women, and, are you qualified? Can you do the job? And I don't care, then let's do it. And like I say, the minority community, whatever community, whether your decision or your faith or your gender or whatever, it's just, can you do the job and let's do this and let's work together. And so that's why that's disturbing that someone would even make a reference to white being part of any heritage thing of proud to be a white sheriff rather than being a sheriff and a good sheriff.
Are there other points you'd like listeners to know about your candidacy?
Well, I'm retired. Been retired for 3 years. I get up each day at 9:30, 10. I go out and eat. I'll go run and do something. I'll come back home and take a nap every day. My life's great as retiring. No, I'm married, don't have kids. So I'm not running for sheriff for a name or for any other reason except my compassion and my care for the men and women in law enforcement, and my compassion and my care for our community, the men and women and families of Buncombe County. I'm president of the FOP. I don't get paid for that. I even have to pay dues. This year will be my 20th year as president. Reaching out issues that affect our community, reaching out through our programs affect our community, reaching out to help the men and women and quality of life issues for the men and women they might better serve the community. So that's where I'm coming from, And I think that we need a change. The sheriff's office need a change in the environment. We need a change in the process. We need a change from you get promoted if you gave so much money to my campaign. They say, I've had several people say, well, how much money you got? You can't win sheriff, you ain't got money. I go, I think right now I've got $100 in my campaign. Most of the money in my campaign I've paid myself. I don't want to be beholden to anybody. I've not asked anybody for money. If they give it, now I'll take it. But I've not asked anybody for money because it ain't about me owing favors. It's about doing the right thing for our community and for our men and women in law enforcement and doing what's right and protecting everybody and making sure we have a safe community. We're going to disagree. You're going to disagree with me so many times. Many groups are going to disagree with me. I'm going to disagree with them. When I met with Black Lives Matter, I go, we probably ain't going to agree on very much at all. But we're talking. And they said, well, at least you come talk to us. Other people won't talk to us. D. Williams, I talk to D. all the time. NAACP, me and D. disagree on a lot of things. But a lot of things we agree on. But that I've got that communication there open where we can talk. I see D. out, she'll come speak to me. I'll go speak to D. And so it's that where we can work together. And this hatred I don't like you because you're that. I may not like what you do, but I don't mean as a person. I still want to be able to listen to you and talk to you and wish you a good day and say, hey. So that's where I come from. I want the community to know that, and I appreciate you. We've got such a great young community. You, like you guys here at this radio station, taking an initiative to do what you do. The energy that's in our community, within our city that I see, is exciting. There's a lot of great things we can do together. Not agree on everything, but a lot of things we can do together as a community. And that's what excites me about being sheriff, is working with these different groups and understanding each other.
If listeners wanted to learn more about your candidacy, do you have any resources?
Yes, you can follow me on Facebook, or my site is lanceforsheriff.com, or Rondell Lance at lanceforsheriff.com. You can reach me by email there. You can follow me on Facebook, our website, and reach out to me, and I'll be more than glad to answer any questions anybody might have. And I appreciate this radio station and the opportunity that you are giving the candidates to come here and speak to the community and to your listeners. So thank you so much.
Been speaking with Rondell Lance for sheriff for election this year. Thanks so much for coming in and speaking with us.
Yes, sir.